Welcome to episode 25 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, Hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast that just stands there and bleeds. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Mike.
Now, you said you've seen Tombstone.
I have, but I guess
I think it's Doc Holliday. He like beats the crap out of the guy. I think it's Val Kilmer. He asks him if he's going to do something or say something, or is he just going to stand there and bleed? Classic scene.
It's
my favorite. My favorite quote from that one is where he's got the two guns, and you know, he's going, "You can't even see me. You've probably seen double." He goes, "That's right. I got one for both of you, or one for each
right,
of you."
Right.
I like that version of it because I like Val Kilmer. So because I think there were two that came out like right
Wyatt
at the same
Earp
time.
Also came
Wyatt
out.
Wyatt Earp
and that's Kevin Costner movie.
And Tombstone, and I like them both, but I like the Tombstone better because I like Val Kilmer.
I see. But anyway, Mike is here.
Welcome back, Mike.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
So we're talking about faction bleed today. But before we get to that, Dave, do you have something to talk about?
No, I don't. Why? Should I? No.
I'm sorry.
You want me to talk about it?
I didn't prompt you correctly. Yo, yo, Dave, you got something to rap about?
Oh, yeah. One of our homies from the North Side, also known as Canada, actually sent us in a rap.
I believe that's actually North Side.
Oh, I'm sorry. North Side.
No, it's North Side A. I mean, get it right.
If we have not yet offended you in this episode, please email us and let us know so that we can offend you as well.
Just give me time. I'm just getting warmed up.
So
it's only taken him 20 episodes, but he's finally getting warmed up.
We've got a rap. We will play at the end of the episode.
We'll play it at the end.
Okay, so we'll throw it in. After the credits, or after the outro music, and that was sent in by Lucas from Canada.
That's right.
And being the only entry, late though it is, he qualifies as the winner.
That's right. We'll have to purchase another bag of wraps next at some point.
I'm sure we can manage that. We'll make Luke bring us some to V3 too.
There we go.
So,
and speaking of things at the end of episodes, if you go back to the end of episode 24, there's a little Easter egg for you out there. Listen to the very end.
There is. I listened to it at work. I heard it.
I thought it was funny.
I'll have to download it.
It's worth listening to. Mm. So, Lucas, congratulations, and thank you, sir, for going to the effort of actually recording something for us.
Yes, thank you.
So we'll play that at the end of the episode. But before then, we have stuff to talk about.
We do.
Josh, what are we going to talk about?
Faction bleed.
As defined as?
I will call it the blurring of lines between factions by having something that is fairly exclusive to one faction become available in another faction in some conspicuous way.
Okay.
So let's say one faction is good at X. It's really not in the other factions. And over the course of a couple of books, those factions slowly sort of gain some control over that domain, if you will, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Okay.
So where should we start?
Well, first of all, do you guys have any gut reactions as to this idea? I noticed it a long time ago. Well, I shouldn't say a long time ago, a few years ago. I've heard other people talk about it. Do you guys have any gut reaction, your opinion on this, whether it exists, whether it doesn't exist? So I'm curious whether I'm just going crazy.
I have seen certain aspects of armies that have seemed to bleed over into others. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, sometimes I wonder, is it only because we started with a restricted perception of the army in the beginning, only see one book of something, then we all assume, oh, that means, let's go ahead and give an example here. Might as well start with that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Protectorate had a ton of AoEs in the first book.
Sure.
Between the Redeemer, the Deliverer, and the Zealot, they could saturate a field with AoEs.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore, Kador, and I would almost say Signar, can, if they try, do it much better. Mostly because their stuff's not inaccurate.
Right.
But
yeah, that was actually the first example that I came through. I was pouring through all the War Machine books. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to go through the Hordes books. I don't know if we want to talk about that. We can decide after War Machine, I guess. But the first thing that I noticed was, well, first of all, I noticed this during Superiority, or about then, during its release. And like you're saying, you know, it's all really relative. If somebody came into the game now, they would probably have a vastly different view of this than somebody who was playing since Prime. You know, we've been playing, I guess, since Escalation or so, maybe right before Apotheosis came out.
Yeah.
And so we had only a couple of books to go on. I think at that point, in my mind at least, the factions more or less had exclusive domains, you know, what they could do super well. Like, Protectorate, as always, has been super on denial. You know, you can't shoot me, you can't cast spells at me, and things like that. Signar has always had good direct range, non-AoE ranged attacks. Crux is always super good with the super speed and the great spell power, and Kator with the high armor, more or less.
And high pow.
And high pows. Yeah. Absolutely. Especially in the Jax. And certainly on the Warcasters, too. But if somebody came in today, they probably wouldn't see that.
I think you still would see it, because I think that those generalizations are still very valid, mm-hmm. because you have to, like you said, you have to start somewhere. You have a foundation. So I think that even coming in, seeing everything as it is now, you're still going to look at it. And I can say specifically from the Signar standpoint, I would still look at them and say they are definitely the shooty army.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, primarily they've got a lot of shooty, a lot of ranged attacks. Now they have other stuff as well that sort of balance it out. But I still think you have that. The only one I would say maybe that wouldn't be as glaringly obvious would be maybe Kador, just because, like you said, they used to be so big on the high armor and maybe the high pow on stuff. But I don't think that's as much true anymore, because a lot of the factions now have some stuff that's got some pretty high armor. Like I've got a few pieces in Signar that are pretty high. Like the Centurion is a great example of a Jack that's one of the higher powered Jacks in the game.
Well, there certainly are exceptions. You know, the bleed isn't going to be so overpowering that you can't distinguish one faction from another. For example, I completely agree that Signar, nobody outdoes Signar in strict range of single shots. And but like Dave was saying, you know, they've gotten a ton of AoEs. That's specifically, I think, in superiority, which I think was my first inkling that this was occurring.
And the same with Kador. I mean, they got the Rocketeer as well.
They did have a Rocketeer.
And they've always had, well, not always, but always since we've played, had Mortars, you know, the Destroyer.
Right.
Even the Spriggan to some extent.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest example of perceived faction bleed. But the other way to look at it, and the question that, you know, we might want to consider is that just because we didn't have a full view of all the factions because we were only going from one or two books to begin with? One way you can say, yes, it's faction bleed, and the other way you can look at it and say, well, no, it's just you didn't have a complete picture. Both are valid.
I would say they both exist at the same time. I mean, once you do have a complete picture, you see where the similarities are, and that's what I'm terming faction bleed. And I guess it has a connotation to it, this term we're using, and I don't mean for it to be a bad thing, and eventually, in a game this complex, you're going to get some sort of overlap. So I don't mean faction bleed as some sort of negative thing, although I suppose in some instances it probably is negative, and good in other instances too.
I just want to address what you both brought up about the, like, you know, looking at the original picture. I think that it's basically what you've got there is that back when they first started in the genesis, say, of the game, I think the developers probably had, you know, the four, you know, ideas in mind, you know, ranged army, heavy magic army, denial army, and high armor army. That's what they had in mind, and they developed it. I don't think it's really a matter of that they maybe had everything fully mapped out to, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to have all the factions are going to be basically having this, you know, this exact thing. So I think that, you know, they did start there, and then it's just the natural evolution of the development is what has gone to this sort of what you're terming the faction bleed, the making it more, you know, well, just sort of spreading it out among the factions so that you've got a little bit of everything in each faction, mm-hmm. you know. That's my opinion. I mean, I may be completely wrong, but I just think from a gaming industry standpoint that's more along the lines of what they did, as opposed to, you know, I don't think we were looking. I don't think we were just not seeing the picture, you know, from the first book or whatever.
Mike, what do you think?
I think it's just a natural progression of the game, because even in, I mean, to take it to its real life analog in actual warfare, your opponent has some massive weapon that just completely decimates your army. You're either going to try and capture it or have somebody look at it on the field, figure out what it is, what it does, how it operates, and try and reverse engineer one for your very own.
Mm.
You're either going to make it or you're going to make something specifically to counter it.
Exactly.
There's also the fact that because of the model Privateer Press is using to release models and books, with every book they release a new set of model entries for every faction. Because they're continuing to do this as opposed to having a set small list like Games Workshop or something does, basically they're forcing themselves to continue to introduce new things to the factions. Otherwise, they're not going to sell the new models. I mean, do I want a second unit that's the exact same as the Temple Flame Guard in the book? No, I want something new. And I say running out of ideas as if that's a bad thing, but, you know, eventually the ideas are going to start to bleed. I mean, I think the Idrians are a good example. you look at the Idrians and all the stuff they can do, and that's not really a stereotypical Protectorate unit.
No.
Which is a good thing. I love them because it's something different. Do you guys have any unit like that that kind of bled in from another faction that you really like?
I think in terms of Kryx, I think we've been pretty shielded from the whole faction. We do have a little bit, but I don't think it's affected Kryx too much. The only thing that comes to mind at the moment is the Revenant Cannon Crew, which is an AoE. Before, all we really had was either a spell or the Blow Thrall, more or less. So I think that the Revenant Cannon Crew, combined with the Privateer Cannon Crew, the Sea Dog Cannon Crew, you know, compared with that, those are all AoEs that we didn't have before. So Kryx can actually put quite a few AoEs on the table, certainly not the most accurate necessarily. But other than that, I think Kryx has been more or less shielded from things introduced to the faction. I think that powerful spellcasting and things like that have bled out of the faction, but I think there hasn't been much bleed into the faction, if that makes sense.
Do you think you're getting the short end of the stick, or do you think it affects you?
No, I don't think it affects Kryx too much.
What about, do you think the Blood Gorgers are still Kryxian?
I think they are. I was actually considering them today as I was going through the books, and they have a lot of the same characteristics that, say, the Bane Thralls do, in that they're not super fast at the beginning, at least. They have, by themselves individually, their mats aren't incredibly powerful, and their Popless Strength is decent. It's not overpowering. So I compare them sort of to Bane Thralls in the sense that they're not going to just... They're just another melee unit. They're kind of slow. But they do have, I guess, what I see as a rules explosion. You know, if you look at their cards or at least their stat lines, it's just chock full of new stuff. You know, every time they kill X number of models, they get this ability and so on. So I think paired with the faction bleed, that has been helped, I guess, by this rules explosion. So the more rules a model has in the next expansion, the more likely those rules might go into another model. Is that clear at all?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more stuff a model has, the more likely it is to go somewhere into another faction afterwards. So that's the problem I have with the Blood Gorgers. I like them, but I think they're Kryxian, but I can see their set of rules being a problem in the future in terms of other factions wanting them, so to speak.
Okay. How about you guys?
I was thinking about the Signar, and I'd say that the two biggest things that I have always felt that we don't have much or any of that other factions, and not all of them, but some of them do have, would be Weapons Master and Shield Wall. Now, I do think that we have at least one at least one instance of each, but that's something that that always seems to me that has been somewhat lacking. And like, I know that, Prector has a lot of Weapons Masters and they're, hard hitting and everything. And I would think that we would have, with our training, especially, we're supposed to have, pretty good, well-trained army, some, good swordsmen and whatnot. I would think you might have some of that. And then the other thing would be the Shield Wall. I think the only unit that I have that does Shield Wall are the Precursor Knights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually, it's an ally. It's not a core Signar army.
It's actually a Signar army.
It is, but I'm just saying that it's the ally.
They are still Signar models.
I know.
Just looking at it, it kind of looks like
half-merc.
An outsider. Yeah, even if it technically
I guess I can see that.
Allies technically are parts of your army that can just also be mercenaries.
Yeah, the fact that they can be in a merc army makes them a little indistinct. Yeah.
I mean, that's really all I meant. I just mean that they're not like the Stormblaze or the Stormguard.
Well, another thing I think with the Precursor Knights is since you can't stack, say, Arcane Shield onto them, that also makes them not as Signarish feeling in my mind. Mm-hmm. You finally get the Shield Wall, but you can't give them the super armor
because
you can't cast a spell on them.
Yeah. So. Well, personally, as far as Weapon Master goes, mm-hmm. I think that's just a matter of perspective because all weapons with Weapon Master most weapons with Weapon Master, barring things like the Dracoon, are lower power than the non-Weapon Master abilities. Normally, what's your Storm Guard pow?
The Storm Guard is a...
It's 12, I believe.
It's a pow 12, and then it's pow 14 on the leader. Yeah, so it's pow 12.
Okay. So that's lower than I thought it was going to be. But, all my Weapon Masters are... Actually, I can't even say that. We do have solos that are pow 15 Weapon Masters.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say...
I was thinking more of our Knights and stuff that are all 11
and that's
and
where
9.
That's where it really comes in, and that's where it really hits because... Like I said, my Storm Guard, it's a good unit, but it's, they've got some great abilities. Don't get me wrong.
I'll trade you a Palomir Other Wall for Junior. I'll give you that melee weapon master.
I'll make that trade every day.
Yeah. Nah, hey, I hear you. But, you know, like you said, if you've got even a POW 12 weapons master, throwing 3d6 instead of 2d6.
It basically becomes a POW 16.
Yeah, that makes a it can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, and as far as other faction bleed, I'm kind of at a loss, I guess, thinking what Signar really would have brought in. You already mentioned the AoEs. Yes, we had basically no AoEs before the trencher grenade porter came in, and then we got the grenadier. I'm sorry, siege. Siege provided us our only AoEs that we really had at that point.
You also had Darius.
I'm completely wrong.
Well, your AoEs were restricted to
We were restricted. You're right. So we had like Darius.
A unit of them.
We had Darius and Siege. We didn't have a core part of our army, like a unit that had the ability to do AoEs. Now you've got, you know, what the trenchers can do it. You've got the grenadier, a jack that can throw out AoEs. So we do have a lot more AoE ability now. So I would say that'd be a good example of a bleeding over of something like that.
I actually have a short list of the AoE stuff that you got in superiority, and it was a lot bigger than I remembered it being. Ekane's feet.
Oh, that's, yes. Yeah.
They blow up in right. AoEs.
Yep.
A grenadier, like you said, the rangers have marked target, allowing your AoEs to be that much more accurate.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
The grenade porter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that's pretty much it.
And the grenadier. Well, and then, and beyond that, though, even the Arcane Tempest Gun Mage has always had, they had an AoE
attack. They had
attack,
Arcane Inferno.
And yeah. Then the Black 13th also has an AoE. So, yeah, they're out there, but they're not like, it's not like, you know, the Zealots or the, you know, some of the other units that's their attack. It's, they're more of a, like a special case.
It's an AoE in a different case. Form. I mean, they all do blast damage and mm-hmm. they deviate and so on, but they come in a different package, I think.
Right.
Which is one good thing. Like I was saying, faction bleed isn't necessarily bad. If they can package it in a different way, I certainly don't have a problem with it.
What about deniability?
It's interesting you mentioned denial, because as I was going through the books, I started making a huge list of things that denied. I'm like, oh, wait, that's a denial. And denial, in my mind, is a pretty broad term, so it's going to cover a lot of things. So I'm considering anything from a ward, so you can't target it with a spell, anything to you can't cast magic, you can't shoot me, even to the extent of now you can shoot me and damage me. Say I'm an incorporeal model. Now you have all these abilities that deny me, in a sense, my incorporealness, or if you're Vilmon, you're, you know, impervious wall. Things like even Iron Curtain I put in there, denying you the ability to actually go up to my caster. I sort of included that sort of thing in there as well. But as I was going on, denial in that broad sense was 75% of everything that I was taking a note on, saying, oh, this is a faction bleed sort of thing, or this is something new. Denial has become, in my mind, a huge part of every army, which I thought was sort of odd, considering the whole idea of the game, at least I've always thought it was a very aggressive go and just go for the throat kind of thing. And denial sort of, it doesn't necessarily change that, but it makes it a slightly less aggressive game, I guess, in my mind. There's a little more dancing on the field than just going for the throat.
Yeah, it certainly makes it more, I think that makes it more of a defensive play. I mean, denial usually can play into more of a defensive style of play. It might not, but I think just agreeing with what you're saying, Josh.
I think that on the other hand, though, I mean, a lot of people talk about the protector being denial and synergy. I hear that term thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
I don't really think those are accurate. I mean, what do you think, Mike? Do you think those are even accurate ways to describe the protector? Because I think the protector more defensive and like kind of resisting attrition. There's a lot of stuff in every faction that does denial and that does synergy. I mean, the arcane shield you can stack on a shield wall troop. That's a form of synergy.
I think that might exist in part because, say, the choir, classic example, it doesn't just affect one thing. It could potentially affect every jack within X. You know, and that's going to be group tight lane, and it's not necessarily the most optimal thing. But
I think that would fall under the defensive and attrition resisting as well, though. I mean, what Protector does.
I don't disagree, but okay. I mean, denying me casting spells, denying me shooting, that's denial.
Sure.
And so since
it is
that, so my point is that you're not just denying it from one model, you know, you're affecting multiple things.
Oh, my point is that I don't think that denial has ever really been exclusively
Protector. Oh, no. And that's sort of the point I was trying to make when I was going through the factions. This is denial, that's denial. Every single thing had some sort of denial aspect to it in my mind. But we were cutting Mike off.
No, I don't think that denial is a wholly protectorate concept. It's because, like you said, everybody's got it. And I think the difference between denial and synergy is depending on which side of it you're looking at. If, you know, it, my opponent's going to look at my choir saying you can't shoot me or you can't hit me with spells as being a denial tactic. For me, it makes my jacks that much better and gives them a little something extra. They get synergy from it. It just depends on if you're looking at a positive or a negative. I think Protectorate, I think synergy though does factor in as one of their main things because, I mean, everybody's got it to some extent. You can add one or two things. The Arc Shield's going to make the Centurion that much harder to crack. But there's not three or four or five different things that you can add on to it. Where with the Protectorate, you've got the choir, you've got Sevi putting up the eyeball, plus any number of other things.
The Vassal and the Reclaimer.
The Vassal, the Reclaimer, everything else that you can add in. I can think of easily four or five, probably more, with Amon that you can just stack and stack and stack. Between the choir, Amon's feet, synergy, mobility, the Vassal, and just make one jack a massive powerhouse at the end of the turn.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do think the Protector does do that the best, pretty much, mm-hmm. of a War Machine, mm-hmm. at least.
I think they have the biggest concentration of it. And going back to the Weapon Master comment from earlier, I think the big difference between, because, you know, well, they're so, almost they have, like, the Signar, I look at it's more the most formally trained army. So they're not going to necessarily, they're going to have the skill and the technique, but not necessarily the drive. You're going to get that occasional model in Signar that's for King and Country, and that's what they're going to go for every time. Protectorate, we're not trained. It's nothing but fanaticism. So, you know, okay, well, you got two guys that'll fight for your king. I got a whole army of guys that'll fight for their god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
Well, some of them are trained, like the higher ones. I mean, especially the ones mm-hmm. actually do have a Weapon Master are pretty extensively trained, but they're the ones who are whipped into a religious yeah. zealous they behind their training.
They didn't go into the war because it was a job. They went in because it was their calling.
Yeah. Or so someone convinced them.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, what about Hordes? Do you think there can actually be Faction Bleed in Hordes with only two books out?
Yes.
I suppose there could be. One thing I wanted to say was, before we get into Hordes too much, was
sorry, we're past. That bus has sailed.
Well, it's a crazy-looking bus.
Pretty short
sail
bus.
Bus.
We had mentioned this on a previous episode. Maybe it could have been the one Mike was on. Hordes, since it came out after War Machine, we inevitably compared it to War Machine, and in particular about how the factions in Hordes are sort of blends, in some cases, of War Machine factions.
I think it would be hard for anybody who played War Machine before Hordes came out to not think of the Hordes factions
absolutely,
in that way.
Yeah. So that being the case, I think there's, and I mean, this is going to sound like a bad thing, I think there's some cross-game bleed in a sense. Obviously, you're going to have a lot of the same abilities and whatnot, but the fact that you can think of Trolls as the Protectorate and Signar in a lot of cases, maybe even a little bit of Kador thrown in, you know, there's that faction bleed. Like, not just abilities, but the actual factions are pounded together. And
I think that's kind of inevitable that they want to go to a new game.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't consider that a negative thing at all, though.
Oh, I don't think it's negative, no.
I mean, I also think it's a lot of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you just said, you used three of the factions to define the Trolls, which, I mean, they don't really personify any of the three.
No, they don't.
But that's just the terms that we're familiar with which we can use to label them.
Sure.
So, I mean, we could, honestly, we could look at Warhammer 40K. I know nothing about the armies, mm-hmm. but we could pick a random army in 40K if we knew about it and probably describe it in terms of War Machine armies.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some so general things we're dealing yeah. with, you know, ranged attacks, even AoEs, that's going to be cross-pan game, you know,
right.
things like that.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess...
Religious fervor and so on.
Yeah, exactly. We're just kind of applying the faction's names in place of descriptors for
sure.
the army
yeah,
type.
Absolutely, yeah. I agree.
But Hordes, Mike, you said that you think they could bleed already.
Yes. Every time something new comes out for Hordes, up until the one model that proved to me that there is faction bleed, and it's going to happen, it's inevitable anyway. Every time something new comes out for Legion, everybody that plays every other faction, oh, I can't believe it. Oh, they've got this now. They're so broken, the easy button faction. It was not... I can't think of a happier day playing Hordes when I saw the stats for Grim Angus and heard every Legion player out there bitch about how somebody else has their ability.
Here's the problem I have about this, and I know this is kind of like what you're saying. This is something I kind of knew was going to come up eventually. I don't care if another faction takes my ability at all. I mean, really, the fact that Grim Angus has Eyeless Sight and can make people Pathfinder, I mean, that's great. That's something that the Troll Army lacked, and it's nice for Troll players to have that flexibility in army creation. My only complaint is purely from a fluff perspective. If Eyeless Sight is not too powerful to give a Warlock, why doesn't Lilith have it? That's my only complaint.
Before we go on, I just want to quickly say, in case somebody new to the game is listening to this,
sure, yeah,
Grim doesn't actually have Eyeless Sight. He has abilities that give him more or less Eyeless Sight.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what Alchemical Goggles give us.
The Alchemical Goggles for Grim Angus, when declaring charges or resolving attacks, Angus ignores camouflage, cloud effects, concealment, invisibility, and stealth. So he essentially...
And forest, right?
It does not list forest.
That's Eagle Eye.
Oh, he has another ability.
Eagle Eye, one of his other abilities, allows him to ignore... his line of sight cannot be blocked by force.
So it is basically Eyeless Sight.
It's basically Eyeless Sight when you merge the two together.
And I would disagree with all... As a Legion player myself, people whining that someone else got Eyeless Sight. I mean, the Kree's always had it. The Cephalux Overlords got it. Big deal. I mean, we still have more than anyone else.
But how often do the Cephalux Overlords actually hit the table?
They don't.
I very rarely see them out here.
And again, it's only one of your Warlocks, too.
Right. And how often does the Kree hit the table? Very rarely, considering how few Scorn players we have that actively play Scorn.
Now, the Kree actually has the Eyeless Sight?
It does. Her eyes are sewn shut.
Right. The Cephalux Overlords, again, it's similar, but not Eyeless.
You're right. We should clarify. But yes, the Kree actually has Eyeless Sight. And
there were so many Legion players that, and maybe it's just the few that always say it. Oh, I ignore your forest. Oh, I ignore this. I ignore that. They don't care that it's on the table, but you have to. All of a sudden, now that I don't have to, I don't care that the forest is sitting there. Who cares? And it was that was their toy.
And
I took their toy away.
And you know what? For all you Legion players are really worried about Grimangus having Eyeless Sight, basically. He doesn't stop you from using yours.
Yes, he does, Dave.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to change the terrain. The Legion player ignoring forest can still hide behind him.
Yeah.
And now that forces the Legion players that play that very simple, I know I can ignore it, but I'm going to hide because you can't tactic. They have to completely rethink their game after playing it for a year that same way.
Yeah.
Because now if Angus is on the table, oh crap.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't have a problem with that at all. I've played a handful of games against Grim Angus, and they're usually fun, and I'm not going to complain about it. But like I said, my biggest issue is the fluff perspective. I just think that, you know, if Grim Angus's alchemical goggles could see through forest and stuff, you'd think that the second sight granted by Everblight to Lilith could do the same thing. And she can almost do it with Hunter now, but her original form can't at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only complaint. But you know what? Neither one of those are going to stop me from playing Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What about the rest of the factions?
I haven't noticed anything in Circle. There very well may be something there. The closest thing I can think of off the top of my head is Immortals Teleportation or Shadow Walk, whatever it's called. You know, usually that's more or less been in the domain of Circle to teleport our things around wherever we want, but still one model who can do that. Sort of like one model in Trolls that can, you know, have Eyeless Sight-ish. I haven't noticed much in Circle. Can you think of anything?
Not offhand. I mean, you've got a lot of spell casting and deniability, but that's kind of been your shtick the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of would be like a cross-game faction bleed where the Wold Wardens essentially are Arknodes because they can cast the spell, or Scarlocks.
Sort of like Scarlock, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I mean, that's been there since Primal,
right?
So
yeah, absolutely.
It's impossible to define it as a bleed.
Well, it's
it's
a cross game bleed.
Yeah.
So,
although I guess Asphyxius is actually a druid. He bled from Circle before the game even.
You're
came
right.
To existence.
This is true.
And I guess the old witch, she wasn't ever a druid, but she was a really closely.
She hung out with him.
Yeah.
They partied back in her frat days, her sorority days.
There you go.
Yeah, she didn't like to talk about those much.
She was a whore.
How about for trolls? Do you think that the hero kind of bleeds from Scorn a little bit? I know the first inclination is no, definitely not. It's the Trollkin hero. He's a champion buddy. But, I mean, he kind of feels in some way like an ancestral guardian.
He's fueled, at least temporarily, by his friend's death, and he screams across the table, killing whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he can get as many attacks, but he's certainly not a hard hitter. I mean, he's a hard hitter, and he does have the retaliatory strike, sort of like the ancestral guardian does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of similarity there.
So I don't know.
Well, since there's not so much out there yet that we could really consider faction bleed and hordes, what about the things that certain armies might actually need as far as future faction bleed?
Hmm.
Like Scorn could really use some Pathfinder because sure. They have close to none of it.
Nah, that's just Scorn.
Well, I mean, they're so mobile, desert. They really don't need the Pathfinder, but, you know, it'd be nice to have it.
They could use some sort of, like, AD, kind of like their equivalent of Adrian's. Mm-hmm. It's not like Pathfinders would help them cross the Bloodstone Marshes.
I was about to say, you know, they live out in the desert, surely they have somebody out there in the...
Someone's got to know where they're going, or did Sax and Oryk just lead them around?
Scorn well finders.
Their weapons are delving rods.
There you go.
Yeah, and they can do a special action to create a 3-inch AoE of water.
There you go.
And then a Gator Man pops out.
And the Gator Man pops out.
I was thinking, going back to War Machine temporarily, you know, we do have mercenaries and, of course, minions and hordes. Given that those are available in different factions, they sort of are the embodiment of bleed in a sense.
This is something, yeah, actually, I was going to mention something like that. We kind of moved on beforehand. But, mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of really good mercenaries that kind of see play in every faction, which. Mm-hmm. Do blur the lines a lot. Stuff like Gorman.
Yeah.
Iris, with the exception of Chris, Trix. Alexia. You see her a lot in competitive lists in the armies that can take her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Occasional Bokers, except for Protectorate.
Yeah. Maybe we need a Boker and a Protectorate.
No, we need a Boker and we need a Mechanic.
Yeah.
I want to be able to repair stuff.
Play Signar.
No.
Or even Krix now.
No.
Yeah, you can play the Exhumation.
Or just I'd take more not. Numa.
Well, since we mentioned Mort Neburg, do you think she's a bleed from other Jack-heavy factions?
I was considering that. I sort of look at the Jack-casters, you know, the so-called Jack-casters, on their own level. I don't mind that every faction has strong Jack-casters and even repair ability. Because I would love to see more emphasis on Jacks, and if that means you have to have a Jack-caster, oh well. I don't think it's a detriment at all for every faction to have strong Jack-casters or Jack abilities out there. Even if it is bleed. Whether or not it is, it doesn't bother me.
Okay. So you dodged my question.
Oh, what was your... Maybe I'm sorry.
Do you think it's bleed?
Oh,
not
sure.
Do you like
it? It's arbitrary for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll say it's bleed.
I don't think it's bleed. I mean, the whole game centers around steam-powered robots.
Sure.
They're going to have somebody that has a big affinity with the robots, whereas the good troop casters are going to have the affinity with the troops.
Let's go back to hordes. We're flip-flopping. We're flip-floppers.
Oh, well.
I'm running for president next year.
Say,
no, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. So, the Hordes factions. What kind of things do you think they do need to bleed into each other? That question was posed, and we did not answer it.
Well, I'm going to stick by my original. Scorn needs some kind, not sure. Not a lot, but some kind of Pathfinder.
Right, yeah, I think that's fair. What about, what do you think the Circle misses? Do you think the Circle lacks... sustainability, something that can take a hit?
I think it might in some cases. I don't think that's something it really needs to survive to be a competitive faction. The only thing that I'm disappointed that the Circle doesn't have are, I guess, just a really solid unit that could take a hit. I don't think they need it, but I would like to see it. I mean, the Tharn Ravagers, they hit really hard, but they can't take a punch. They go down in one hit many, many times.
What's their armor?
16, and they have 8-5 boxes. 8 for the leader, 5 for a trooper.
So, 16, you said?
16.
So, a damage roll of 21 mm-hmm. kills them.
And that's not out of the realm of possibility for a lot
that's
of things.
That's getting charged by almost anything.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, they go down really fast, although they do hit hard. I would like to see something, maybe even a unit that, you know, maxed out at 5 or something, that has, you know, 10-8 boxes and maybe higher armor. But again, there are a lot of things out there like that. You've got champions, you've got bastions,
warmongers.
One of those scoring guys, warmongers. You know, that wouldn't make them unique. So, yeah, I think some sort of heavy-hitting or some sort of unit that can take a punch would be great. Not necessary, I don't think, but it would be interesting. Other than that, I have no complaints about the Circle. You know, we have lots of maneuverability. We don't care about the terrain. We have lots of spell power, which I love coming from a Krix perspective. Our melee isn't super great, but it's decent. And our ranged is where it should be, I think. So I actually don't have any complaints at all about Circle. I love that faction.
I think the Legion needs ways to ignore terrain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ignore
definitely.
Your models.
Mm-hmm.
Get more attacks and move models around the table relatively freely.
Yeah.
Right oh, now. Oh, wait. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What you want then is a whole army of war chiefs.
I was thinking more of, you know, Seraph's Animus and, you know, Seraphs and Angelii and...
Oh, the stuff you've already got.
I think that our beasts with wings aren't fast enough. I need something at speed 8 with wings.
Mm-hmm. And, flying monkeys.
And armor piercing, but not as a special attack.
Flying blighted monkeys.
Flying blighted monkeys would be mm-hmm. awesome.
It could be a feat for a new caster. She pops her feet, and then flying blighted monkeys fly out of her butt.
I like that.
We could. That's going to be Epic Vale's feat.
There you go.
Maybe that's what War Spears
Cloud of Monkeys.
I think so.
I mean, there's already Field of Crows. We can have Cloud of Monkeys.
This is true. But on a serious note, I guess we should probably go that way. Mm-hmm. The only thing Legion doesn't really have is the really defensive unit. I mean, we've got the Warmongers. They're okay, and they will fill the role. But I don't think we need much more. I mean, a heavy cav, something that's a little bit longer charge range, it's a little bit harder punch than the Raptors, is kind of missing, but I don't think it's necessary in the army. I think that there's a lot of ways that the Legion lacks, but I don't think that we don't make up for it in other regards.
And I think that's good. I think that shows good balance, good design for the faction.
Yeah, I mean, we go down easier than the Ravagers do. Entire army, pretty much, with the exception of the Augurans. And that's fine, because everything hits extremely hard.
Yep.
What about trolls?
I like the trolls. I really can't think of anything else off the top of my head that I really, really wish I had. I really like the buffalo. The champions are just great, especially since a lot of the other players hate the champions. Anybody who doesn't play trolls.
Yeah.
I like how the faction works, because I'm used to the Protectorate synergy, and there's a lot of that in the trolls.
Would you like something that's faster?
I've got ways to make them faster. I almost like not having it, because I can turn around and use it to my advantage later on.
What about, you know, you don't have much reach. What about lack of reach?
We've got the Impalers have reach.
I mean, on your troops.
On the troops?
I mean, with the exception of the hero, do they have any at all?
Just the cavalry.
The cav, yeah.
Sure.
None of the warlocks have reach, do they?
Don't believe so.
You need a pig warlock with reach.
I want a pig warlock anyway. Or better yet, a whelp.
You got a pig warlock.
No, no. That little guy that hangs around with Bork is not a warlock.
I'm talking about Rorsch.
P-Y-G.
Yeah, P-Y-G, not P-I-G.
Oh, well, that's okay. The only person I can think of possibly having reach would be Horlock.
Actually, Bork has got reach.
Oh, yeah, Horlock may have reach, actually.
Oh,
Bork does.
Yeah.
Bork has got reach, Horlock's got reach.
See, I don't play this faction anymore.
But yeah, I wouldn't mind a unit with reach.
Yeah, I mean, even something like, I guess Trolls with Spears is kind of fluffy, but...
I could see a pigs with spears.
Sure.
I could see that.
But, well, pigs are tough too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That would also be a small base as you could.
Yep, small get base around, unit with up. Reach.
That'd actually be really highly useful for you.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they got a mat 5, kind of like Karax, and they have CRA.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, pig, what's the word I'm looking for? Not sentries, not skirmishers. I can't think of the word.
Stabbity pigs.
Stabbity pigs.
Stabbity pigs, dude, would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Even if they just had like gang or something, so they couldn't see our, you know, something.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be actually pretty cool.
So other than pigs with reach, yeah, I'm happy with trolls.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, actually I go on a fluff or theme perspective, do you get bored with, for lack of a better term, having the same chassis on all your beasts? Like, look at Josh's beasts. You've got constructs, you've got rams, you've got wolves, you've got all this variety.
Yeah.
All the Legion stuff is pretty damn random. You've got two light types, or races, or species, I guess, for Scorn, and a few for Heavy. I mean, you have basically, you either have a Dire Troll or a Troll. There's no real variety. I mean, the elemental ones kind of, but...
Nah, I think it's fine just spicing it up with, you know, the Pyre Troll, the Slag Troll, and just having the different flavors of Troll is fine.
You don't wish you'd have something else as a Heavy?
Not really.
Okay.
For Scorn, all their Heavies except for the new Mullet Karn coming out, aren't they all Titans? Or do they have a non-Titan Heavy?
They have the Spike, the Spikeadon.
Rhinodon.
The Rhinodon.
Right. Yeah.
They have the Pokemon.
Yeah.
You have to choose him, though.
The Polkadon. Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess, you know, as much as people talk about how very fluffy and interesting to look at the trolls are, there isn't that much variety in them aesthetically now that I think about it.
No, not really.
It's trolls in kilts with weapons.
It's human-type trolls. It's
midget trolls
and then huge trolls.
Yeah.
Weapons are different.
It's interesting that the faction that has the least variety is the one that people really love the aesthetics of.
Yeah, and there's little way around that, I guess. I mean, because they are troll bloods. They're not troll bloods and friends.
Yeah, well, trolls. Yeah, and they already can work with pretty much every minion. That's kind of like their and friends right there.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Interesting. I'm glad that the Legion has a couple of different types of units. You know, we got the Ogryn and the Elves, and who knows, we might get something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it provides enough, and it's basically your light chassis and your heavy chassis, kind of. I mean, you got the little high defense, low armor, and then vice versa for the Ogryns. So it actually gives us versatility.
Yeah. And the Circle, like you said, there's lots of variety. That's one thing that I really like about the Circle, is that I don't feel like I'm taking same thing in all the army, you know?
Yeah. Kind of bleeds into War Machine, too. I mean, look at Krix. You've got a lot of stuff that doesn't look the same, with the exception of the Banes.
True, true.
And but I've got like the Protectorate, and I kind of have the Knights and the Flame Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they kind of, all those are similar in some respect.
Right.
But there's enough outside of those two groupings to provide a lot of...
Yeah, and that comes from the fluff, yeah. I think, you know.
Yeah.
The Circle, they're all disparate tribes and whatnot, so they're not going to be the same anyway.
No. Do you think minions are going to provide the same kind of bleed that mercenaries do? We talked about how mercenaries, some of the, like, really common stuff, you see it all the time.
You know, when I play again, when I use my Hordes factions or play against a Hordes faction, I usually don't see, I mean, there are minions on the table, but it's not like, oh, there's Gorman and Eris again, or I don't see the same things. Every so often somebody will take Alton, but given that he's so Hordes-centric, you know, versus Hordes, you don't always see him, especially in a mixed environment. So I don't see as much dependence on minions, I guess. And so I think that helps restrict the bleed.
You guys don't see Pharaoh Brigands everywhere?
Well, besides them, they're in every army.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but, you know, seriously, like the Bog Trogs, anybody can take them. I still don't see them all that often.
And when everybody can take them, is it really a bleed?
Yeah, I see them more often in Steamroller.
Sure. I mean, because they are an excellent unit.
Right.
But given that they are excellent and you still don't see them that much, that means there's probably things in faction that take their place, which is good, I think.
Yeah, I actually own 8, and every time I look to put them in, it's like, well, I could throw them in, but man, I have so much other cool stuff.
Yeah.
So. Is that about it for faction bleed? Anything else you guys want to add?
Not for me.
Nothing here.
Nope.
Pat, what do you think about Hordes?
I think it's dreamy.
Awesome.
So, Mike, you brought a Grim Angus list to talk about?
Yes, I did.
With his eyeless sightness?
Yes, with his poor man's eyeless sight. The Pyre Troll, Blitzer, and Impaler. Alton Ashley. A 9-man unit of Creel Warriors with the Standard Bearer and Piper and the Caber Tosser. Trollkin Champions. The Stone Scribe Chronicler, the Fellcaller, a full unit of the Krillstone Bearer and Scribes, and the Stone Scribe Elder.
And a hero.
And a hero, yes.
All right, Mike, so how do you use this list?
Pretty much like any troll list gets used, the Krill Warriors go out to run interference, kill a couple things, and slow the opponent down, and bless their Legion and get to bypass all that kind of fun stuff.
Oh, I don't think that's as easy as you make it sound. We'll get to that eventually.
Took mostly, well, all beasts that have ranged weapons so that Grim could have any one of them at any time, given that he's close enough, be able to ignore forests that might be in the way for determining line of sight and making their shots. Blitzer, because he's got the multiple, well, the possibility for multiple shots on the D3. The Impaler, Critical Slam, and because it's pretty much Angus's pet. And the Pyre Troll, just because, well, it's kind of personal faction bleed. I like my fire. Being a Protectorate player, and try and work it in wherever I can.
So your trolls are all from the Protectorate?
Well, they follow Menoth.
If you fight for Menoth, we'll give you land.
That's right. Signar burnt you on that once, but we won't.
We're going to give you land in Northwest Protectorate. North Protectorate is Lael. Northwest Protectorate is Kador currently. But as soon as you carve out enough land for you, you can have it up there.
That's right. Alton Ashley, just so that if I've got a Hordes opponent, I can use it like anybody else is going to use Alton. And if not, he can kind of sit back and be a sniper.
With Crack Shot, he's great for taking out unit leaders.
Mm-hmm. Kuril Stonebearer to be able to boost the defense or the armor. The Elder just to give those fun little advantages.
And the Elder in the Kuril Stone unit actually increases the size of the aura, is that right? Or he increases the potential size of the aura?
So that can make it a potential 11-inch range from the Kuril Stone.
Because that's all we need is another
another inch under that Kuril Stone.
And the Elder's the one that adds the additional abilities, right?
The Elder's the one that's got the additional abilities. Combat Warding.
Which is?
Instead of gaining the armor bonus while affected in the protective aura, friendly Trollblood models do not suffer continuous effects or blast damage and can only be moved or move during their activation. Spirit Chaser. Attacks made by friendly Trollblood models affected by the Kuril Stone's protective aura may damage models only affected by magic attacks.
Vilmon hates that.
And may charge incorporeal models. And Stone Strength, instead of adding the armor bonus while affected, they gain +2 strength.
Yeah, that's... You know what? Those three abilities need to be put in the Choir of Minoth so then they can sing on troops.
Yes.
But that's beside the point. That'd be faction bleep.
That'll be the choir unit attachment when that finally comes out.
Yeah.
It'll be last episode.
The Choir Elder.
We talked about that last episode. It was awesome.
And then the Fellcaller for all of his typical fun tricks. Make a knockdown model stand up, giving Pathfinder to a model/unit. And Warcry for the +2 to attack and damage rolls on melee attacks. And then the hero to run around with the obligatory unit of champions and to get better as they die, and hopefully he doesn't, until they can deliver the smackdown.
Stupid champions.
Great champions.
I don't like it.
If I could make it better. I can move some things around and put a second unit of champions in there.
That's all right. We're good with one.
Okay.
What are you going to do with the Kuril Warriors? Why would you put in the Kuril Warriors and the unit attachment and the Kaber instead of more champions?
Because right now I've got it's not a full unit of Kuril Warriors. So it's only a 9-man unit plus the attachment plus the Kaber thrower. It ends up being a point less than one unit of champions.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of 6 models, I get 12 models. And with the standard bearer, as long as they can see him, they don't get knocked down when they make their tough roll. Plus, they can, they've got the 5-inch, they've got cav formation. So they can spread out further on the board and tie more things up.
And super tough once a game?
And super tough once a game with the mini feet.
That's a hell of a speed bump to get through in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is. And plus, with champions, you know, every point of damage you do over armor starts to kill them. For Kuril Stone, or for Kuril Warriors, every point of damage you do after the first is lost. It's mm-hmm. wasted.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it actually causes your opponent to do more damage in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, point wise, sure.
So.
And when assuming they're close enough for the Kuril Stone to affect them, they end up becoming a defense, they stay defense 12, become an armor 17, which makes them the exact same stats as far as that as the champions are.
Yeah, so champions without the stone, yeah.
Right. Well, champions without the stone.
And 17 armor, at least in my experience, is really just past the hump where it's hard to get that 17, at least from the factions that I tend to play.
You've got to put that little extra in to be able to force the tough roll and hope that your opponent doesn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, especially for the circle, like you were saying, they're generic troops. You're talking POWs 10 or so.
Like the wolves, they're a pop strength 9, I believe, on their spear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's...
Of course, on a charge, sure, they're going to easily roll an 8 or whatever.
But trackers as well.
Blood trackers, yeah.
But if the Kuril Warriors all just run up and engage your front lines, you can't charge them.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, since we're talking about Circle, Josh, would you like to go first?
I've played against a Grim a couple of times with Circle, but it hasn't been any time recently. Off the top of my head, I'd say Kruger. He has a pretty good ranged element here, and so Windstorm, and even combined with Skyborn on Kruger himself, that can really minimize the damage or even hitting of his ranged attacks. That won't take care of his melee attacks, which he has a strong component here. The Kuril Warriors running right up in my face, I could probably take the Creel Warriors out, or at least match them with any melee unit I had, anywhere from Ravagers to Wolves, even Blood Trackers.
Gators?
Gators. Although they do have a higher speed that I might be taking the charge at that point. But like you were saying earlier, even if I can numerically take them out above their armor, that tough is still going to be there. And then if they make that, they're not going to be knocked down.
Right.
So I'm probably going to have more in terms of numbers, just to sort of bank that in my favor a little bit. But then he walks up with the caber and just smashes three or four of my guys.
Yeah, but if you're pouring points into a numeric advantage, you're not getting Kruger's Wold Wardens that he likes.
True, true. Although the unit circle units tend to be kind of cheap, somewhere around 100, even less for the more potent units. But yeah, like you're saying, we do want the Wold Wardens in there if you want to do the lightning spam. Even one Wold Warden would do okay, although it's not going to do much against Creel Warriors spaced out 5 inches. So you have to use their lightning if you used it to take out things like the Fellcaller, or maybe boosting on a hero, or the Chronicler if you can get them. Alton and the Feralgeist would go down pretty easy too with that.
I seem to recall you played a 1,000-point game this last weekend where the Druid Overseer let his druids use a barrage of elemental bolts.
Mm-hmm. They took out Epic Lilith, actually. A little different than taking out Grim Angus.
Well, I was thinking more of like the units, maybe?
Possibly, if you can get them up there. You know, a druid has a speed of 6. He's got a range of 8 with the elemental bolt or strike, whichever it is. So you got 14-inch range, threat range there. That's even greater than a Creel Warrior's running speed, so they won't even be able to catch you and get up in your face by the time you did it. Not that you have to be out of melee anyway. But yeah, the druids would do well with that. But again, the tough is going to... It's really on him to keep him alive with that tough roll. I could probably damage him any day of the week, but still. But let's say I did take care of the Creel Warriors. I still have the champions to take care of, and those have always been a pain in my side. Not only because their defense can be higher than a Creel Warriors, but their armor's almost always going to be higher with a Creel Stone there. And without a lot of really hard-hitting stuff to take him out without losing twice as much in return, you know, that's always been a problem with Circle, at least for me. So after I clear out the everything except, hopefully, the champions, I might then try to go around and just flank them to get to Grim Angus himself. If I can take care of a couple of his beasts, his transferring opportunities will be lessened. And if I can get in there with a couple of Ravagers, or even if I can sneak a beast up there, that would be good. Or even just resolving to use pinging him with lightning every so often, that will cause him to transfer, because his armor is 15 or 16, I can't remember. I think it's 15. I think he's a 15. No, he's a 6. Oh, his armor's 15?
Armor 15, okay. Over Mangus.
That's cool then, because you're 3 off on the roll on a boosted lightning. You're doing 7 points of damage or so. I can hang with that. I can do that. And using the Wold Warns, if you get him up there to slam a couple of champions around, that would be good, unless the Crowstone UA was saying, you can't move me, in which case he's got a nice tight little brick, and that's going to be hard for anybody to break.
Yeah.
So, that's a couple ideas.
Okay. Well, I know playing Legion, my concern when I play against trolls usually is how to get to the back to get the Creel Stone Bearer to try and drop armor to make it easier to deal with them. My favorite tactics are things like arcing fire or concentrated volley from archers, or, you know, Seraph strafe in a hole.
I've seen you use raptors to do that.
Raptors can. I have flanked with them before, but in this case, I might need them to try and whittle on the Creel Warriors. But also, we mentioned before, with Bog Trogs coming in from the side, might be able to either get to the Creel Stone or tie up a flank of stuff,
mm-hmm.
which would be handy to try and make it so that he can't just march forward in his block. So that's an option. The ideal situation against any troll, because they're on a medium base, is to clear a hole and send in an Angelius.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always going to be easy, especially given Grim Angus's feat, which we haven't mentioned yet, but basically he picks a point in his control radius, and all enemy models in his control radius can't move farther from that point than they started. Basically, they're tied to
it. They're tethered.
Yeah. So if he picks a point that's in position such that my stuff can't get to him, then I can't. Luckily, when he feats, usually it's to keep me from getting to him, but I have a strong range complement to my army, so I can still work on killing stuff the turn he feats. I just won't be able to assassinate him, usually. There are ways around that, obviously, like Epic Lilith's feat increasing range, Lilith's striders, archers, Seraphs pouring shots into him. Eventually something's got to give. Hopefully it's him. As far as his little marching wall, I might, especially if I have Thagrosh, be willing to hold up the Kreel Warriors with Warmongers. Effective armor of, I think they're base 17, so they're effectively 19 in melee if I have Death Shroud up.
Right.
That's going to be a pain for Kreel Warriors to get through.
A little bit.
And Kreel Warriors have a low enough defense that if I actually do kill one and they aren't tough, I will get my Berserk attack. So it would be a decent way to tie up and hold them and kind of keep them in place. Likewise, most of the time, especially with Death Shroud, I'm not opposed to using Warmongers to tie up champions for the exact same reason. You know, champions sure can hit them, but the first couple aren't going to be doing much damage because they haven't built up their strength bonus yet. Obviously, if you use the strength buff on the Kreel Stone, that's going to change, though.
Mm.
But the problem is, I don't field more than one unit of Warmongers, usually ever, and they can't do both those jobs at once.
Yeah.
Something just occurred to me, and this may be something you do or don't do typically.
Okay.
Given the Warmongers have reach and mm-hmm. champions don't, would you consider positioning them such that if you were to be countercharged by the champions, you'd be taking free strikes on them? You know, altering their facing so that they would have to move into your back arc, so to speak?
Usually I haven't done that a whole lot. The reason being is that in doing so, I typically will have to move them so that they can't. If they berserk, they'll have to go into their friends. Oh, you're talking about champions that they're probably not going to kill.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on like how serious the game is. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe in a very serious situation, yes. Worst case scenario, the champions will probably maneuver in such a way to really minimize that.
Right, right.
It might force them out of that +2 to defense, but probably not. I could see it doing some damage. It's almost, to me, partially because I'm almost lazy, more trouble than it's worth.
Not to think about it unless it's like yeah. a champion, I mean, or a national tournament or something. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of time that's time in my turn trying to set that up. And I don't mark the sides of my bases. Mm-hmm. This is a side little
sure.
thing because I like it as a frame for the miniature. I love miniature painting, and I like the bases to be clean as a frame. Sure. So because I don't have that marked, I'm not going to sit there and debate and line it up with people to try and achieve that.
I can see that, sure.
If I had them marked, it probably wouldn't be nearly as big of a deal, and I might do it more.
But still, like you're saying, you know, it takes more thought than it's probably worth it. You know, you might get one free strike and know, well, is that worth the extra 30 seconds it takes to actually set it up or something?
Yeah. So it's a good point. And yeah, any Reach troop could actually sure. do that, and it'd work. You know, one thing I might actually like against Kreel Warriors. You're never going to hear me say this again. Blighted Legionnaires.
Yeah.
Especially with Draconic Blessing on them. Get some strikes back, especially with Incubi. That's going to be a gigantic grinder across the middle of the table with the two units hitting each other, though.
Yeah.
But it could just be fun just to do. Stuff that goes over your troops. I like I said, archers. Striders. Deathstalkers with snipe doing auto points can get through your high armor. Not going to kill a champion, but they can start forcing tough checks immediately despite whatever your armor is on your warriors. Or your Kreel Stone if they can shoot it. I don't know. I like getting the Angelius Hungromangus.
Yeah.
And because you have this huge army that I have to fight through to get to him. I mean, the way I see it, you've got a lot of units, melee units, are going to try and open up a hole for Grimm and his beasts and anyone else who's alive to shoot through to hit mm-hmm. my Warlock. And my Warlock's not going to be hiding behind Forest to protect themselves. The problem is you've got this almost disposable line. You're not trying to kill me with your melee troops. You're just trying to tie me up and drill a hole. And I don't want to let you do either, which means I've got to deal with the army. I can't just go around it because I've just given you the hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to deal with it and get into the back with Gormangus, and he's got quite a bit of transfer fodder there.
Yeah.
I think that getting a lot of melee troops to him will require me to go through your army to do it, which I'm probably not going to be able to do easily. So that makes my best bet. Stuff like archers under the Epiclus feet, any Seraph or an Angelius on Gormangus. I think that's where I've got to usually pick him off.
Yeah.
Or a fantastic mutagenesis to Thagrosh would be hilarious.
That would be great.
We've mentioned the War Chief before and the Iron Chef. And Josh, you mentioned the War Chief a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Not good against trolls. Tough rolls mess with Ryas's feet. Tough rolls mess with Berserk. You can try it, but all it takes is one or two good tough rolls by the troll player and the Iron Chef stalls.
Yep.
So, too much of a gamble in that regard. The other option, the last option I guess I'll throw out there is Saren. Simply because you have so much melee, I can use a smaller force under Saren's feet to hold your melee in place and go around.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to shoot whatever I feed on, if you can. I mean, it's not going to be immune to Gromangus himself, but it's something. Oh, we mentioned Ryze. We actually haven't mentioned this ability of Gromangus, and we should do that real quick. He has a spell called, I believe, Lock the Target.
Yes.
Which is an offensive spell. If he hits, it removes things like stealth and invisibility.
Yep.
So basically, if he can get that on Ryze, everything can crush her.
Yep. Loses, -2 defense, but loses she goes camouflage. Invisible
after she hits somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can he hit her if she's invisible?
Because his
goggles let him shoot invisible things.
Yep, because the goggles.
Right.
So he would then
declaring
put the
charges or resolving right. attacks. Right. So he'd ignore invisible to be able to target her.
And then everybody else within
right, field. Exactly.
And so, assuming he can hit.
Same thing with Denegra. We haven't gotten to War Machine yet, but.
Yeah.
That's Legion, though. I mean, so that's basically what I do with the Legion. Gotta kill Grimm. He's the only model that matters.
Yep.
How about Scorn? The Scorn meat grinder and the Troll meat grinder. We've talked about this as being the quintessential kind of two bricks meet, two bricks enter, one brick leaves, two bricks enter, one brick leaves.
Normally, you know, I'd say Emorkel is the answer to almost anything, but if Grimm's hiding behind a forest or something, if there's not an Extolar on the board, which I guess there probably would be.
There would be.
Then, there will.
But, so, okay, so never mind. Emorkel is the answer.
This is true. I mean, Emorkel.
Yeah.
And he could, he has that spell that he can cast on a model that it can basically charge through intervening models.
It
put that
ignores intervening models for determining line of sight.
Put that on a, and pass through.
Yeah.
So put that on fueled Ancestral Guardian.
Exactly.
That's going to hurt Grimm's Day.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, we talk about trying to get the Angelius back there. That's a large base.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get Ancestral Guardian, that's only a medium base. Trying to get Morgul himself, that's a small. Mm-hmm. That is much easier to place. At least, though, you know, Morgul can't go through the forest.
True.
He could see through it, but he's not going to be charging through it.
Yeah, unless he can get up there and then teleport into it.
Yes. So.
But it's more likely for him to teleport first, I would think.
Probably.
In a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. But between double damage over armor and
no transfers.
And no transfers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Between the no transfers and the double damage over armor, Emorgul could easily finish off Grimm without charging. You just got to get up there. So.
Plus, doesn't he also, if he doesn't break the armor, he does the auto point. He's got the anatomical precision.
No, that was just the first one.
That was a regular one. He lost that.
But let's go with the stereotypical Iron Agenda answer. Patented 2009 or 8, I don't remember. You take Zol and you leap with the kitties.
There you go.
Meow.
Which, that's a stereotypical answer for us, but for the Scorn, that's pretty much their only choice to get through the woods.
Yep. Because it's that one instance of them having Pathfinder.
Yep. Or virtually.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. You've got, I think, Kerox would tie up the Creel Warriors for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to kill them to do it.
Yep.
Which means you're feeling the Ancestral Guardian. If you don't mind giving up the Reach, Tim talked about using Praetorians to deal with the Reach troops on the other side of a wall a couple episodes ago. Having them go in there and kind of just start doing auto points and stuff. I mean, they could do that to champions too, but again, that's another way around the higher armor of the Creel Warriors under the stone.
Sure.
Especially under Makeda's feet. You bring them all back. Mm-hmm. Then Makeda could help stall this out.
Yep.
I mean, I think Scorn's probably going to be looking to do something similar that you are, and that is create a hole to get the Grimm. The difference is you have a lot more options for when that hole appears shooting through it, because you can ignore the terrain. You can, you know, get a lot of range attacks through there. Scorn usually doesn't do that. They do have Venator's, though, and you're on medium bases.
Yep.
And the Venator catapult.
I'd buy that for $1.
Buy that for $1?
Maybe $1.50.
Do you think a little Xerxes Gisentrati hopping brick would work?
I don't know. I mean, he's going to lay down the smack, sure, but he's probably not the answer most people would go for.
No. One thing I will say for any Scorn heavy, which they might choose to use here, is that because you chosen a blitzer, typically, in my mind, that says you're going to want to use the gun. He's probably not going to be quite as far up as you would have a mauler. Is that correct?
Early game, I'm not going to be looking to move him up too far because I can always put the Impaler's Animus on him. to get that extra distance with the range. But he's still, even with the gun on there, he's still a mauler.
Right.
I can still get him up there and tear things up. And if he does get, and I can still have the gun. I can use that. I just can't shoot something I'm in combat with.
Right.
So.
Okay. So basically, you don't use it as a mauler with an extra pig ace. Use it as a pig ace with a mauler attached.
Early game, it's a pig ace with a mauler, and late game, it's a mauler with an ace.
Yeah. You've got enough melee stuff to throw between the opponent and you that you don't have to get the mauler out there.
Right.
So by saving the mauler's melee capabilities till late game, you're kind of letting the scoring player get a little bit closer with their heavies, do more damage, without the immediate fear of retribution.
Right.
Not that your champions can't do it in if they start getting their Brothers in Arms built up.
Brothers in Arms.
No, that's their defense
concert.
When they get concert built up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's an option. Stupid trolls can't be trampled over.
That's right. Well, only the trolls that nobody ever uses.
Yeah.
The small base ones.
What are those?
I don't know.
Well, if you're burrowing the pigs, anything can trample. Because they're not actually
The pig burrowers and the bushwhackers.
Mm. And the keg carrier. You can trample the keg carrier.
You can trample Kenny.
Anybody anything else to add for hordes? All right, War Machine. So Signar.
I think against this list, I'm probably going to play to the strengths that I talked about earlier, and that would be more of a ranged army. Mainly because, again, it's a troll brick. It's hard hitting. The champions are brutal, but it's also they are slower. And I know that you can get them up there if you need to, but by and large, you're going to be a little bit slower maybe than some of the other armies you face. So I think I could take advantage of my ranged attacks, at least in the opening rounds, to try to, you know, whittle down some things. So with that in mind, I think I like either a siege or maybe an epic cane against this one. A siege would be great for the half armor of his feet because, you know, again, it's trolls. They're high armor. So I need to try to take them down. I know they're tough, but, you know, I got to try to knock them down in the first place. And especially on a, you know, for an end game situation, if I can get your warlock in my control radius, pop my feet, and then of course the obligatory Reinhold on a siege list, so that he'd have a second shot as well, would be good. Same thing can be said for Epic Kane. I'm thinking end game. If I can position Kane where he's got a shot at Grimangus, I'm going to pop my feet on him and hope for the best. You know, the good thing is you can only transfer so many shots before you're going to hopefully run out, and I'll be able to focus those ever-increasing POW shots on him, and I would hope that would be the end of it. As far as support of the army, I'm going to put the trenchers in because first they're advanced deploy. They're a nuisance, against your ranged attacks, of course, they're going to be dug in, so they're going to be more defensible against that. I can shoot at you. And, you know, I probably would pull in the put in the unit attachment, and I would at least maybe try to, you know, have them up there shoot, and then maybe try the tactic of shoot and then fall back a little bit, just maybe to give it a little bit more as you're advancing, just to keep that buffer. That's one of the things that, you know, everybody talked about when I first came out, but I've actually never used it that way myself. Just because the pacing of games usually was such that once they're up there, pulling them back was really not an option. But it might in this case. I mean, with the slowness of them, I don't know. The Black 13th would also be good, again, for the ranged. They've got their long shots, so they could shoot pretty far. But also, I can, you know, throw in the AOE. And then, of course, the another thing with the Black 13th is they've got sort of that Epic Kane-esque chain fire ability, which basically, you know, it's for every direct hit that their POW will go up by one, cumulative plus one. So that could be another one that would be good on, on Grimm or something else on your beasts even. Because they could actually hit them. They could probably hit them and then, you know, start racking that up and they do some damage there as well. So those would be good. Probably the Cav, the Storm Lances are good because they're tough. Throw, you know, put an Arcane Shield on them. Then they're arm 20, so they could actually survive some hits, and they could help tie up some of your front line. You know, throw them at those champions or the have them go up against the Creole Warriors. Just if nothing else, tie them up. Try to kill some of them off, but at least they can tie them up and keep them from coming back at me. I will also put. I own one truly Hordes model, and that's Alt and Ashley. I got him specifically if I ever had to play against Hordes, he'd be in that list so that I could use him against the your beasts. So, you know, have him in there for trying to do that as well. That's probably it. I mean, that's a lot of points there I've mentioned. I'm sorry. I forgot one thing.
You forgot the hunter.
Yeah, I was just about to say. Throw some jacks in there. Definitely a hunter. For the obvious reason of having that armor on these troll beasts that you're throwing against me.
Is that on Junior or do you put that on Kane?
I think I would probably put it on Junior and then just make sure to keep Junior back where he's protected, because you know he can see, you know, with the nice thing about that is he can be 12 inches away from a hunter and still be able to give it the focus. So that would be a good thing, because one thing you really don't want to do is you don't want to take focus away from Kane in any incarnation, really. But I probably would put him on Junior. I think that would be safe. And then that's probably about it. I typically don't put many jacks in an epic Kane list just because he doesn't play well with jacks. He likes to keep his focus for himself. Now, on the other hand, if with a siege list, definitely a hunter. Very possibly a defender for the same reason. It's a nice POW 14. I can make it an AOE with Siege. So those would be the, I would say those would be the jacks there, you know, to go against that list. It'd have to be, it really would have to be something that has a punch, because against the trolls, anything less, like, you know, I've got a Sentinel, but they're POW 10 shots, and what's that really going to do? So... yeah, that's what I would try and see what happens. Again, like I said, I've only played against trolls a couple times, and what I learned from it was that the champions are bad, like everybody else already knows. So just hope for the best.
Okay. I guess do the Protectorate. Let's see. Well, Protectorate likes them some troops, so I'm probably going to have plenty on the list. I like Idrians to try and slow up the Krill Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with
Prey.
Especially with Prey. Should be able to kind of chew through them. Obviously, you're going to have tough rolls, throwing a kink in that. But it's a decent option. Zealots also. I mean, none of their stuff has high defense. It's going to be pretty easy to directly hit with my Zealot bombs most of the time. The exception being if your champions are in base-to-base, and therefore I can only... if you give them screening because I can't get a direct line, then, you know, they are a 14, which is the edge of hittable for Zealots. I still like I always like TFG, but TFG mm-hmm. are a great tie-up unit. Plus, setting stuff on fire.
Especially
against trolls, because if they can make that tough roll, they still got to deal with fire the next turn.
Yep.
And there's a good chance that POW 12 can do you in, because you don't have the Creel Stone up when fire goes off.
Right.
There's no way to have that work. So that's an effect, and that extra 2 points of POW on the fire. So, you know, things like Epic Fiora and a Redeemer setting mm-hmm. stuff on fire.
Or regular Fiora popping the feet.
Sure. Even something like if you can get Rovan and the Honor Guard near Idrians and have them start shooting into your lines. Their guns might not kill you, but if they are within, I think, 2 or 3 inches of Rovan, they cause fire on direct hits. Nothing wrong there. Of course, that kind of bunches them up, though, but no. You don't have any AoEs, really.
No. Well, the Pyre Troll, but that's right. It.
Which could wreck the day of some Midrians. I mean, they're low enough armor.
Mm.
But, I could spread my own fire love out there.
Yep.
You know, like Pat said, Cav are good, especially if you wound one and they get basically Pathfinder. If they can charge the woods, they still have to have line of sight to Grim, though. But if they could get that line of sight, they could take care of them. The obligatory testament off, speaking of Cav, just bringing them back and kind of moving them around. But that's kind of a straightforward kind of way to do it. Kryas wouldn't be as good because your front line isn't going to be able to be knocked down.
True.
You could see a larger base stuff behind it, but all your crew warriors are probably not going to be knocked down. And they're on medium basis, so they block line of sight to the champions, assuming you keep them in front. I think a high priority target's going to be the hero. Going to take him down. before he gets too studly because of the champions. And because he has that retaliation strike and with reach, that's going to be kind of hard. I'm probably going to wind up trying to send someone like Vilmon or Paladin at him. Hit him with that little Buzzsaw Weapon Master and hope to take him down. Because I don't have the range that like the Legion does. But other than that, I mean, I'm going to have to go through your army.
Yep.
Unless I have some Idrians I can flank with. I mean, if I kind of move up a flank with the Idrians and you ignore them, I'm going to send them in there and try and do something.
Well, as a Protectorate player as well, I'm not going to ignore the Idrians.
This is, right, true. The one thing I'm kind of worried about that if I leave a gap is going to be really bad is if you use Gormangus to bait the line and send the Blitzer in with extended charge range, bait the line is charged for free at speed plus 5.
I believe so.
And that's not going to be good for a Protectorate Warcaster. I have had Krios specifically get eaten by Maulers on multiple occasions.
I think we have a picture of one of those.
Yeah, we do.
Courtesy of Chad.
Yeah, that was Chad from the American Hill game. yeah. That was bad. So, I mean, my Warcasters are somewhat squishy, especially Severius. The old man is going to drop like a rock to a Mauler.
Yeah.
The problem I don't like playing Protectorate against Trolls is, I mean, I can use Jax to get a punch and start trying going through your troops. But because I can't heal Jax to get that 1 point back left in the system to use it, like you can a beast, it's really risky to use a Jack to try and take care of a unit of troops, basically. Exception being stuff like maybe the Castigator because it can vent fire.
Mm-hmm.
It can use Combust, which is POW 12 to everyone within an inch of it. So. Of course, I wouldn't protect it from the champions.
Yeah.
But, man, I'd like to get a line and toss either the Harbinger or my Warcaster with the Covenant up there to Grimm early. Because, you know, the Covenant prevents from being knocked down if you read the first passage. And Harbinger can't be knocked down either. So you could throw them and they could activate and go after Grimm. But even then, if you've got too much focus on you to transfer, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. That's probably what I do. Lots of fire. Tie up your troops with my cheaper troops and hope Tough doesn't screw me too much. And then send in something tough against Grimm. Likely for me, Cav or a solo or the caster. For my playstyle, those are the three people who will probably do the end kill. Maybe a Jack, but that'll depend. What do you think? Am I full of crap, Mike?
Well, yeah, but there's some validity to what you say.
Okay, okay. So, Cricks?
Last time I played against Grimm, it was actually in Hardcore last Gen Con, and I happened to have Epic Denegra at the time. And that worked out pretty well, so if I knew I was going against Grimm, I might choose her. With her, Mark for Death works great. With all the ranged element here, you can throw it on a Jack up front, high defense Jack, put it in a cloud. Grimm will ignore the cloud, but anything else won't. So you can protect her as she walks up field. In general, though, with Cricks, that first line is going to be hard to take down, the Krill Warrior line, being the super tough and no knockdown. I would pair those guys up with probably a unit of Bane Knights. Even though the numbers might be even, he actually has more Krill Warriors than I would have Bane Knights. But with Shadow Shift, I might be able to get two hits for every one. And assuming I can hit with the Weapon Master, I'm not concerned about not breaking the armor. And that would sort of even things out, I think. I think I could trade a Bane Knight unit for his Krill Warriors, except for maybe one or two in the back. When it comes to the harder targets like the Champions, I'm going to have to stack some things that I try to typically do with like Parasite or any sort of Necrophage, for example, anything that'll lower armor. And then meeting that with some Bane, with some Bile Thralls, those POW 12 stacked on top of that can hurt quite often, if you can do more than one, especially. So if that doesn't take down half the champions, then I'll probably have more work cut out for me, but I think a few purges would hurt the champions pretty badly under those sort of conditions. Because there are 19 under the stone, maybe I can get them down to 17 or 16 even. From there, I'm left with a few solos. The Hero, the Fellcaller, and then Alton. Not too worried about the Feralgeist too much. The Beasts I'll have to handle with either more troops, Bane Knights, possibly maybe even Mechanithralls if I can get them up there. You know, POW 15 combo strikes are going to hurt even a Pyrotroll under the stone. Even if I can just tie up the Beast, that would be fine. Because really the killing blow is obviously going to be on Grimm, and Krix typically doesn't have too much problem getting something downfield to damage the caster or warlock. In this case, it might just be an arc node, spelling him to death if I have the coven. Even either Denegro, either Asphyxius would work great. Terminus maybe not so much because of the big bases getting away with line of sight. Charging might be difficult in a lot of cases. Although him throwing things around would be kind of humorous, as usual. Scar might be okay meeting melee with melee, but I kind of think that at one point when she feats, even if she's stacked with armor, that's going to be a turn where I might end up not doing a whole lot, if only because of the tough. I'd hate to blow that turn at 32 armor or whatever, make attack after attack, and then not taking anything down. That would be kind of frustrating. So I might steer clear of Scar. But simple melee troops, stacked with Biles and some armor dropping debuffs, I think would work great over most of those. And then try to take care of Grimm with a spell assassination.
Okay.
Something like that.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Okay.
What about Cador?
Widowmakers.
Auto points are going to hurt. Sure. Mortars to get to the Creel Stone if they can hoof it upfield. Especially like with Epic Sorcerer, and she can use Desperate Pace on the mortars, move it up first turn.
Yep.
And then let it shoot even further.
I can see Kayazi with the underboss sneaking around the side. Just going straight for Grimm.
Sure. Yeah, that could be. That's horrible for hordes.
Mm-hmm.
Beast 09 and his boosted attack rolls.
Yeah.
And Thresher are going to really hurt some Krills. I mean, again, it's kind of like the problem I mentioned before, though, is if that arm goes out, he's screwed. Or, you know, even worse, his movement goes out.
Yeah.
So, but Sorcerer might not be bad. You're not going to feed in the whole army. But if you feed on the front line, you're effectively doing the same as Grimm's feet. You're slowing his army and stopping him from getting to you.
If you can feed on Grimm, if you can see him, you wouldn't be able to feed the next turn. You might have to back off if you can, if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about a reprisal in that sense, really.
Sure, yeah, that's true. I like Markov. Just because his if he crits, his 4-inch knockdown stupid template is just funny.
There's a whole lot of anti-knockdown here, though.
Yeah, but it's funny.
It is funny. I will grant you that. And the Pow 10s might actually kill someone.
I mean, if he could lance, and that's the thing, if he can actually get that charge off on the unit attachment, and he crits, even if he doesn't crit, creates an AoE, if he kills everything on the template, nothing's picking up the standard. Because it's outside of an inch. So he's basically killed it. You know? And at that point, of course, if you're fielding him, might as well be fielding Ulans, which are being nice. The speed's not as necessary in this list because the trolls are slower. So you can get to jump on a beam with things like Doom Reaper's IFP. Do you think IFP would stand up to the Creel Warriors? What's the power on a Creel Warrior? It's pretty low.
10.
Mm-hmm. So, and then plus 2 if they use the ability.
Yep, so 12.
And Shield Ball, it's
you could withstand for a turn or two.
Yeah.
Although if you are clumped up like that, you're probably not doing a whole lot against them at the same time.
Right.
But if you need that for positioning or something, I can see that working.
Yeah. Sure.
And then, you know, you spread out after that.
Mm-hmm.
Go for the punch.
I think that the Widowmakers, especially with the sprays with the unit attachment, I'm not Widowmakers, I'm sorry, Winterguard, with the attachment that gives them sprays, they're going to catch a couple Krill Warriors under each spray.
Mm-hmm.
That could be interesting to see how that works out. Again, it's so hard to give a solid tactical suggestion against the trolls because tough messes with any tactical plan you put together. You cannot account for that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say, okay, well, I can allocate 3 more points of damage to this model to make sure it dies. No.
Right.
So because you have to plan around that, it makes it much harder, especially with War Machine where focus is allocated in the beginning as in his organic as Fury. It makes it that much harder to work around it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, you know, like we said earlier, Cador has the big hitters. Even with the Creel Stone, they can kill stuff in the troll list.
Oh, yeah.
If the tough rolls don't go the troll player's way, they're going to have no problem at all chewing through your army.
Yeah.
And that's the downside of playing against Cador.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Epic Irisk Man of War army hitting this thing could lead to very bad things.
Yeah, it could.
That'd be good times having especially things like Widowmakers shooting through the troops from the back that you can't get to, capping off important people because, you know, oh, auto point damage. You made a tough roll. Oh, auto point them again. They can, right. They can guarantee tough rolls, even they can't guarantee the tough rolls are going to fail.
Right.
So,
but even after a while, three or four tough rolls in, you're probably going to start failing.
Right. Exactly. Well, unless you're Mike.
No, unless you're James.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
No, James always makes his tough rolls. I only make the ones that save my game.
Don't remind me.
We've kind of alluded to this talking about Eagle Eye and whatnot, but trolls typically have a problem with rough terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Terrain in general. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Fell Caller there typically to make this particular unit have Pathfinder, but with Grimm in particular added to a Fell Caller, terrain probably isn't going to be much of a trouble for this at all, much difficulty at all.
He's probably going to put the Fell Caller go on one unit, and he's going to put the spell on the other. So the units,
right. Yep.
Yes, the solos, well, I'm sorry, the frontline melee units will have no problem.
Right, right.
The solos, the Creel Stone, the Beast will still have to go around probably. Sure.
The Creel Stone, for example, typically they don't need to move too much anyway.
No.
You know?
Typically you can find a fairly wide swath up the table, even if it's at an angle,
right.
And know, okay, my Creel Stone's going to be going up this path. Uh-huh.
Because with an 11-inch aura, you know, if everybody's there, that's pretty significant. That's a wide area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times it's possible to box trolls in, you know, put them between a forest and a mountain or something. But here, that's not always going to be the case.
Right. The other thing, we actually haven't mentioned it specifically, but, you know, Grimangus's feet, we've kind of alluded to it, but it can be a real pain, especially for melee armies, fighting more trolls, fighting Scorn. I mean, we talked about, oh, Morgul can pop up there and get to him. Well, Morgul's not going anywhere if he's been caught in a net.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Same with the Protectorate and Cador. And even a Signar Jackalus like Darius is going to get tied in place. And that's going to be a real pain. And it gives Grimm and all his shooty stuff another round of shooting. And it gives his melee troops another round to get to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't back off.
Plus, with the second gun that he's got, if he's either popped the feet and there's still one juicy target left, or if he hasn't popped it yet and you've sent something up early, I can go ahead and hit you with a snare gun and hold that one model in place for the turn.
Yeah, we mentioned, you know, Cador, Beast 09 would be really nice. If Grimm's willing to sacrifice not using Headhunter, he can fire the net gun every turn. Beast 09 is not going anywhere.
Right.
And that ability to just tie a model down, especially a low defense one that he doesn't even have to boost to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Is really great, and it can be hard to get around. You really have to be careful fighting Grimm.
That paired with, is it Mantrap that knocks down?
Yes.
If it damages, Mantrap knocks you down.
I mean, another way to just handle, you know, to pin another model down, sure, it can move or attack, but knocking something down is huge. And it, like you're saying, if you got something big up there, what if he does need to use Headhunter that turn? If he can Mantrap Beast instead, that still pins it in place for you, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to walk, but it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Unless you got a couple models up there and it can't get around, you know, or whatever. Grimm has so many ways to pin things in place and direct how you move on the table.
Yeah,
it's frustrating as anything to play against.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the big problems with playing Legion against him, is that, you know, our biggest advantages are our mobility and our high defense. Grimm can
take away one.
Yeah, take away one, and he can take away the other one if he can knock you down.
Yeah.
So it's a problem. You've got to, in most cases, make Grimm feet early.
Yeah.
Which is very hard to do if he doesn't feel threatened because he's got, what, like 25 billion trolls between you and him?
Right.
He doesn't care. So that it's really hard to make the Grimm player feel like he needs defeat defensively.
Mm-hmm. And especially if the Grimm player is in a good spot that you can get that juicy target that comes up and knock it down with, you know, snare it, and the next turn knock it down with Mantrap. Okay, now he's knocked down. Shoot you with Headhunter. The Blitzer's got three shots against the knockdown model. Chuck the Caber at it. The Impaler getting with his Animus getting the boosted distance on the shot. You know, or if I don't decide to knock it down, boost the hit for the Impaler and try and slam it and knock it down that way.
Yeah.
And you set it on fire with the Pyre Troll.
Set it on fire with the Pyre Troll. And then watch it burn in the maintenance phase.
So, yeah, it's...
I love the smell of Roast Legion in the morning.
Yeah, thanks. But, yeah, I mean, it's a tough game. We've mentioned stuff we do to it, try and get around some of it, but, I mean, you still got to get to Grimm, And if that boy can find himself a forest to hide between or hide behind and just start shooting through it, that is not easy. You better hope you brought enough to chew through the units, because then you have time to try and chase him down.
Because
if you didn't, and it's just kind of a running chicken game while the units are kind of just tying each other up.
Yeah. And with the trolls having, with the units having tough and the beasts having regenerate, they can play the attrition game better than most anybody.
Yep. All right. I guess that pretty much does it for us.
I think so.
Faction bleed. It happens. Accept it.
Kind of have to. Yeah. Or you can stop playing the game.
Exactly.
I prefer to play the game.
I do too.
You can either stop complaining or play Prime only.
That's another option, actually.
You know? Yeah.
And just ignore the rest of the world, Mike. Mm-hmm. Is this your solution?
I reject your reality.
Maybe part of apotheosis. And just stop.
I reject your reality and place it with one of my own.
Mm-hmm.
So that does it for us. Stick around for after the closing credits. We will have a wrap for you. And I guess, Mike, thank you for coming out and talking trolls with us.
Thanks, you.
Thanks for having me.
Stupid trolls.
Great trolls.
You know, I liked you.
Drunken trolls with their tartans.
I liked you much better when you were talking about the same faction that I play last time.
Well, you know, switch to trolls and we won't have a problem anytime I'm up here.
I can't play the trolls. I play real factions.
Okay, Protectorate, but yeah. Oh, wait, you got that easy button.
Yeah. I play the Legion of Easy Button.
Exactly.
So, all right, everybody, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you
later.
Goodbye.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.
My name's Lucas Smith, press ganger guys from Vancouver, BC. When I found out no one had submitted a wrap, I figured that I should submit the one I'd started and didn't have time to finish. I'm only guessing one of the two I submitted because the second one is rather explicit and is just an alteration of a Kid Rock song. Anyway, so I can't probably can't sing in tune or sing to a beat very well, but I figured what the hell. You know, they can't do a contest and have absolutely no entries, so at least I'll do this. Anyways, my rap is about Epic Vlad, because I figured, hey, there's lots going on about him, and lots of discussion about him on the Iron Agenda, so that it would fit. So, here we go. Killing casters every game, I'm a surefire bet. From the first round of play, I'm a national threat. I'm a king amongst casters well ahead of the curve. I cause experienced players to lose their nerve. I'm a hardcore ringer, as we have all seen, and it's all 'cause of my feet, blood legacy. Peace.